Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You're listening to the Wild 7 Podcast Network. Listen different.
Hello, my friends. This is Alex Rogers, and I'm wishing all the mothers a happy Mother's Day. And what you're about to hear is another interview between my mama and I. And I gotta say, folks, I believe, just saying very humbly here, that I suck as an interviewer. I just truly, honestly believe that I need some practice interviewing. In my opinion, I talk way too much during this. I interject far too frequently. Now, mind you, my mother comes out smelling like a rose, as we say. She is providing wonderful bits of information and storytelling, if you can get past the guy who won't stop talking. This is also to say thank you very much, Mom, for showing up on the program. And next year, I'm going to do a lot more listening. In the mean, in between, everybody, please give it up for my dear Mama.
In the words of Alex Rogers.
Episode 52, El Día de la Mamá 2. Mom, welcome to the show again. It's so great to have you down here in Los Angeles.
Yes, it's nice to be back.
Yeah.
A while. It's been almost a year since I was here.
Exactly. So. Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, you know, one of the big reasons I brought you here is because it is indeed Mother's Day. And one thing we were both talking about, and it's almost a bonehead observation, but it is true. You don't have a Mother's Day without a mother. And said mother ain't around unless she has a mother. And as some of you out there might be able to relate, mothers sometimes are blood-related. They're directly the portal to your existence, mother. And then oftentimes we meet others who become mothers. And they are just as appropriate and functioning as a blood mother might be. In fact, sometimes, in some situations, they might be even more so. But what's interesting, Mom, is that you have a background where you grew up with two strong motherly influences, one being your blood mother and the other one being your stepmother.
Right. I did.
Yeah. So let's get into some of those origins. First of all, the one who I really got to know, of course, because she partially raised me growing up, was your dear mother, mm-hmm. Valentine.
Yes.
And of course, we called her Val growing up. And Valentine, I wanted to get into her story a bit because, you know, sometimes it's pretty miraculous that any of us even are here. And usually it's the result of some ancestor just kind of skirting by death a couple times and being around long enough to, you know, have their succession in life. So as I recall, and what you've told me, Val had a little bit of a sort of rocky, well, I mean, she was sort of a survivor in terms of birth.
Well, right. My mother's father died before she was born by about 2 months.
Right.
This is after my grandmother had had 2 stillborn children.
Yeah.
And then my mother was the third, and her father, who was named Valentine, mm-hmm. Died, I think, of a heart issue when he wasn't all that old, and my mother was still 2 months from being born. So when she was named after her father.
Mm-hmm.
And she was, of course, an only child because he was gone. And my grandmother never remarried.
Mm-hmm.
She lived a very happy and independent life afterward.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
So my mother was, raised as an only child in Carmel back in the 20s.
Right, because she was born in 1915,
She was born in Los Angeles.
Oh, I never knew that.
Yeah, she was.
Oh, wow.
But they moved, she and her mother and her grandmother moved to Carmel in 1919.
Mm-hmm. Okay, got and you. So she's still quite she was very the little young, one. And
they all sort of, it was a, you know, very small village then and full of some eccentric people. And the houses, of course, most of them didn't have electricity. And the streets weren't paved.
Yes, well, I've seen some photos. So I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but I've seen some photos of Val as a little girl playing in the backyards, basically the woods of Carmel. Because at this point, as you say, we don't have paved
that many houses, and there were no paved roads. And
amazing.
My mom did, and she kind of rattled around on her own. I don't know that she went to school. She had school friends. There was a little school in the village, but
right.
I do think she always said she was kind of a lonely kid.
The reason I wanted to talk about that especially is that for those of you, which is most of you, who do not know my grandmother, one thing that was remarkable about my mom's mom, my grandmother, mm-hmm. is that she was a magnet for social life, considering she says she had mm-hmm. a lonely existence as a child. Certainly by the time she was a mother and she was part of the Carmel Highlands community that my mom was lucky to therefore grow up in, that I was lucky to therefore grow up in, that, and certainly when I was growing up, the funny thing about where we grew up in the Carmel Highlands is that both she and her neighbor, Cynthia, who quite honestly for me, talk about like, you know, you can have your blood grandmother and then you can have your familiar like grandmother who quite honestly this is also Val's best friend. You can imagine that these are two women who knew each other as girls, I think, like, right? Like even as children, they knew mm-hmm. each other. But then you're having children concurrently. You're both surviving your past husbands with various different stories, depending on who you were married with. And you are neighbors and having dinner a few times a week. And so Cynthia was also instrumental, certainly to me, as a grandmother. And but why did I mention Cynthia other than just to give some context of like these older times in Carmel?
I think you said you were thinking about photographs you've seen.
That's true. And I just remember now it's because both Cynthia and Val became sort of these hubs for visitors. And the thing that's funny about where we grew up, and I you know, you never saw these women at least visibly bothered by it, but people would just show up and open your door and just come in. Hi, how are you? And, oh, come on in. Come on. It's great. But like I knew people over the course of my relationship with my grandmother, who were older, they're like, you know, maybe people in their 20s, 30s, 40s, And they certainly found a kinship with her where they felt, correct me if I'm wrong, Mom, but they felt like she was kind of a mother for many.
Yes. It's true. My mom, I think, having not grown up in a family with lots of with siblings, and my mother, and who never even held a baby, she told me, until she was in college. And Cynthia, her good friend, who had children, married early and had children early, my mother held her first baby when she was, I don't know, 21 or something.
Oh, wow.
And she said she held the baby like, you know, you'd hold a big heavy log or
right.
something. I mean,
yeah.
She didn't know what to do. But my mom ended up being a really great mother, natural mother.
Absolutely.
And a very loving and warm person. And it's true, she acquired all kinds of sort of surrogate children or people who just were really fond of her. And young people throughout her life, she always enjoyed young people. Or even when she was 90, she would look at you if you're 60, and that's a young person. So she
right.
had a wide variety of friends. And so she may have had a lonely beginning, but she certainly didn't have a, you know, her adulthood was,
I love the turnaround of that
yeah.
because it really goes to show that you can live different lives
yes.
in your life.
And I think my mom had a really delineated, she lived to be 90, and I think the first 45 years of her life were one kind of thing, which was growing up and then being a mother to young children.
Right.
And being married and then being divorced. And I think the second 45 years is when she really came into her own with her running her own household and developing her own interests and really
right.
enjoying her children as they grew up. I know she always enjoyed her adult children.
Something that's interesting about both Val and Cynthia. Now, here's the difference. When I was a child, I gotta say, Val was always so soft and warm and accommodating and sweet to me. Cynthia was someone who I always liked her, but you got the feel, she was a little scary when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And because, I mean, this also is a matriarch who it runs this entire institute of various lodgings and also just nature that's just around you. So she just, you know, she's the boss. And also I think she's of that old school, like we don't really quite, she wasn't locked up. Like we don't talk about our feelings, but we're also not cold people kind of thing. And anyway, I noticed that as I got a bit older, Cynthia warmed up a
yeah.
bit to me.
Yeah.
And it is.
I think we were all a little bit afraid of Cynthia when we were children.
Well, you too, right?
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
And, but of course, she was absolutely marvelous. And it is
yeah.
true. I think she really enjoyed, you know, I think both of them really enjoyed children when you got to the point where you could have interesting conversations with them.
Right.
So.
Absolutely. Yeah, and so. And so your mother had you, relatively speaking, late in life,
she,
right?
She did. I was the youngest of four, and
right.
She was heading to pretty near to 40. And
right. In fact, was she my age, 38, when she had you?
I think she was 38, yes,
wow.
when I was born. And,
yeah.
You know, at the time that, well, I don't know, at the time women had a lot of children. So it wasn't so uncommon to have your first child quite early.
Right.
Like her friend Cynthia had a child at 20.
Right.
And her last child at 40.
Wow. A 20-year period of having
and
children.
I knew
yeah.
several families where there was quite a long span.
Yes.
You know, now it's much more likely that you're going to have one, two, or sometimes three children. But it's just, these were big families back in the 50s.
Right.
As my mother said, because women's choices were pretty limited. And my mom was a college-educated journalist and writer.
Right.
But she was not employed. She was a housewife. And she said, you know, after your latest child got to be about three, you're sort of at loose ends.
Right.
Another baby.
Ah.
It was, you know.
Interesting. Right. that'll solve it.
And I guess it seems like it was so much less of a financial undertaking to do that.
It does seem like it gets more and more expensive
pretty,
to have kids.
And the way we grew up, which was pretty bohemian and no creature, I mean, there were no fancy amenities, you know.
Correct.
And life was cheaper. There was no technology to buy.
Right. Well,
there were fewer expectations of your physical, you know, what you'd have in a house. We all shared bedrooms. That was just common.
Well, even this morning, making breakfast, and my mom pointed out that the microwave currently in my house is on its last leg. And yet, she did comment, you told me growing up.
Oh, there was no.
No, there's no microwave. Not in the early 60s. No.
I mean, we had a telephone and a party line, I might add. So it wasn't just, you know, you could pick up the phone and find the other people who had that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or not had the number, but shared the line. I used to listen in on their conversations. But
of course, right.
Yeah, you know, it was pretty basic. But of course, yes. We knew no different, so it didn't make any difference.
No, wait, tell me a bit about that, when you would listen in on conversations.
Well, I never really heard anything, you know, really.
But what was your strategy? You couldn't just phone off. Yeah, you'd have to lift it up.
And then, you know, my mother always said, now you know, that's eavesdropping. So
yes.
So I would do it surreptitiously.
Right.
And I never heard much.
Sure. That, you know, well, also when you're a child, so much adult talk is such gobbledygook. You don't really know what's going on. But yeah, but that is
and
funny.
I remember very rarely, because a lot of people had party lines then. If you really had an emergency, it was kosher to say, I'm sorry to break in on your conversation, but could you hang up because I have an urgent call I have to make?
Oh, wow.
I mean,
interesting.
Sure. Otherwise, you just had to be polite and patient and
and
wait till the line was free.
Wow. I feel like that's inconceivable to new generations today.
It is
like, wait, what do you mean sharing a line?
It's
like, yeah.
All of these things. Anyway.
But a microwave was fancy back then.
Well,
like if you,
I don't think a microwave, honestly, I don't know.
Well, I don't mean the actual object, but I mean getting one was like a status maybe or something.
I don't even think they were available back in my childhood. As I
was
telling you today, the first one we ever had, I was pushing 30, and I'm pushing 70 now. So, and I think that was pretty much in the early 80s is pretty much when they began.
Interesting.
I think.
Because everyone starts getting less fit about the 80s onwards, I've no idea.
The other thing that we didn't have, and this is not usual, most families, I think, in the 50s were getting televisions.
But
we never had one I don't think it was my mother disapproved, but we lived in an area where we had no reception. In those days, you had to have an antenna or an aerial. And if you were in the mountains or where we were, sort of in a remote area, there just wasn't any reception. So we never had.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
This episode is brought to you in part by Purina. Purina is dedicated to creating richer lives for pets and the people who love them. From helping older pets think like their younger selves to making cat ownership a possibility for more people than ever, Purina is helping pets thrive so they can live long, healthy, and happy lives. Purina has you covered for all your furry friends' needs, whether they meow or bark. From litter to treats to their best-in-class, nutrient-packed food with taste your pets will love, Purina's got your back at every stage of your pet's life. Your pet gives you the joy of the spring sunshine all year round. So today and every day, care for your pet with Purina. Your pet is Purina's passion. To learn more, head to amazon.com/Purina. Tidy Cats knows that home is where your cat is. So they've designed the Tidy Care Alert Health Monitoring Cat Litter with your furriest feline in mind. Here's the inside scoop. Litter plays an important role in your cat's health, happiness, and well-being. Tidy Care Alert uses pH technology and color-changing crystals that are gentle on the paws to monitor your cat's health and alert you of any potential concerns. It's the perfect tool to help you ensure your cat gets the care it needs.
Put your mind at ease and let Tidy Care Alert help you keep an eye on your cat's health.
I never had a television until I was an adult.
Right. Now, also, you did get your TV on as a child, but you'd have to go across the highway.
Yes. My good friend lived further up the hill. Therefore,
right.
With her family managed to get a rather snowy black and white.
Black and white, no less.
Oh, yeah.
So, because when I was a kid, I was getting deep into Star Trek.
Yeah.
And you told me, well, check this out. I was watching those episodes as they were airing.
Right.
But you did say, fun fact, however, because that show is, of course, quite psychedelically color, but not on the TV you were watching.
No. I used to go up across the street and on Friday nights. Nice.
You remember the nights that it would air?
Friday night. And we would see The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Oh, nice.
And we would see Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there was another show, which was called Wild Wild West.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And I think those were the only three things I ever saw. And my friend and I would, you know, kind of... It was, and also
decipher.
The television was about as big as a... it was small.
Small TV, right. But you know what's funny is you don't... You know what's funny about small TVs is we actually nowadays, when you're a cool kid, you're watching stuff on your phone. Which is even
absolutely
smaller.
And, you know, even when we got a TV, and you'll remember this, Alex, when you were a kid, we never got one that was bigger than a 13-inch.
Never. No. And I never felt like I was missing out.
That's what it is.
No. Most of my life has been a small screen.
Now, I always talk about we have a big TV. I think it's a 27-inch.
Right. It's not... Right. You've never done a flat screen on the wall?
No. It is a flat. Oh, yeah. Well.
Oh, you do have, right.
We have a flat screen, but it isn't on the wall. I don't want it on the wall.
No.
I don't want it to be the looming presence in the room.
Dominating your living room. No. Well, luckily you.
My TV is hidden discreetly under a Indian bedspread.
That is true. It is. It is. Like all great things in this family, usually books take precedence over any technology. Now let's get back to some of that. When you were I forget if we talked about this on the last Mother's Day episode, but we'll just brush against it again. It's not so much about mothers, but just because we're talking about cool things to do, you I believe told me that you kind of got into reading because it was sort of around you.
We did talk about this, I know.
Okay, that's right,
we had tons of books around, and I just...
Yeah, just got into that. Now, Val, obviously, was a...
She was a great reader.
Huge reader.
My father, everyone was. And so it was just kind of...
So it was kind of encouraged. I have this image in my... Okay, would you ever come back and tell Val what you saw on TV and, like, relay to her, like, any Star Trek episodes or anything?
No, okay.
I don't know if you were like me, where I come to you and tell you of that, and you so very graciously sort of half-listen to it.
I happen to remember that when you were a kid and my mother would come to our house and babysit you, I believe you and she were watching a modern... Or more modern version or iteration of Star Trek.
Correct. So when Star Trek The Next Generation came out, you nerds at home were about to have a conniption. Relax. But yeah, Star Trek. Val and I would watch Star Trek The Next Generation. What I remember the most is that every time Jean-Luc Picard would show up, Val would go, "Oh, that Patrick Stewart is just so handsome."
And I agree with her.
Oh, yeah.
And even now, he's an old guy, and hey, I'm an old girl, so I still think he's handsome.
He's quite wonderful. In fact, when I saw him and Ian McKellen on stage together doing Waiting for Godot, the funny thing is that Ian McKellen played the part. Like, he really looked like a homeless guy who wandered onto stage. His voice was also intentionally a little lower for stage volume. You had to almost kind of lean in a little. Mm-hmm. But then when Patrick Stewart came out, it was Patrick Stewart. And it's like, "I am a homeless man and I speak like this."
You know, speaking of books, and because we're talking about, I think we're at least trying to talk about my mom.
Yes. In a very roundabout way,
her mother had a thought that the Oz books were terrible. That she really disapproved of them. They were, I don't know for exactly what reason, either they weren't classics or because they were newish.
Sure, at that point, yeah.
Or maybe she didn't think they were well written. But she didn't allow my mother to read the Wizard of Oz books.
Interesting.
Which is, to me, is really bizarre because my feeling is you let your kids read anything.
Yes.
And then they'll, but. So, of course, for my mom, I think eventually she snuck them somehow.
Right.
But she never told us that we couldn't read something.
True.
Even I, who had to read every single Nancy Drew that ever came out, my mother didn't have any problem with that.
And
comic books, which we read voluminously.
Right.
And she had no problem with that either. My grandmother was more... more sort of aesthetically rigid, as she
sure,
and also she was completely not entirely in the real. I mean, she was in this very intellectual world, just way up there.
Well, she always kind of struck me as this sort of like witch lady, sorceress lady.
Well, she was all into this.
And this is, by the way, folks, we're talking about Val's mother Susan.
Susan,
yeah,
who was. Very intellectual and sort of thwarted because she was a Victorian. She was born in, this is amazing to me, my grandmother was born in 1877.
Oh, wow.
Which isn't that much past the Civil War.
No.
And the generations in our family are long. My grandmother was 40 when she had my mom. My mom was 38 when she had me. So
my
grandmother was born a long time ago.
Wow, you're
and
right.
At the time, when she was growing up, she was desperate to go to college, but her father said women do not go to college. But she turned out to be a voracious reader, and what they call an autodidact, where you basically teach yourself. And what she was interested in was philosophy and literature and as it turns out, mythology. And she became actually quite an expert on old Irish tales.
Uh-huh.
A lot of these tales are really old, pre-Celtic.
Wow.
And she had a fabulous voice, and she sort of developed this shtick of reciting Irish poetry.
Wow.
And she sometimes did it for adults, and she sometimes did it for school children.
There's a photo in your home in the hallway.
Yeah.
Where she's sitting and holding lots of children
with
you know, as a captive audience. Or maybe they're when do we get to leave?
This was an article in Life magazine, and I have a feeling those kids look really fascinated by these tales.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they might not have been so fascinating for kids in the 50s.
Of course,
but
right.
Anyway, she did that. And she also had kind of an occult thing. And it was a big, in the beginning part of the last century, in the 20s and 30s, there's a whole lot of what was it called? You know, seances and Ouija board and all this stuff. And my grandmother was into this thing called automatic writing, which is basically where you channel something.
Right.
And your hand moves. Now, my grandmother, I think she took it a bit with a grain of salt. She used to say, apparently, it was a good party trick. But she, if she wasn't channeling, she had a fabulous imagination.
Right.
And she wrote her pencil.
Yeah.
And I guess any pencil she held in her hand, but her pencil was called Tommy. And Tommy was sort of the person who was relaying stories to her.
Yeah.
And she wrote in this huge loopy writing. So she wrote on shelf paper.
Wow.
Because her writing was several inches tall, her cursive.
Wow. Okay, interesting.
And
yeah.
Tommy told her all kinds of stories. Sometimes about the lost continent of, and I wish I could remember now, it's not Atlantis. There's a Pacific. There was an equivalent Pacific lost continent. And my grandmother lived in Big Sur. And I think her thought was she was sort of...
right there.
Right
yes.
there, this continent. And then Tommy told her about all kinds of goings-on in the Gobi Desert. The Gobi Desert is always coming up.
Oh, wow.
And my brother, one of my brothers, years ago, when he was a teenager, I think, unrolled all these rolls of shelf paper and actually transcribed all the Tommy writings.
Wow.
I should show them to you sometime.
Well, that's very interesting.
Tommy was
wow.
So, always would begin, he would start talking to Susan. He'd always say, "You are a perfect dear."
Well, that's very helpful for a familiar that lives in you. That's that. In fact, I think we all need a Tommy in our lives. Yeah. But go on.
Anyway, so she had this kind of occult or whatever aspect to her. And yeah. When we get to the subject of my stepmother.
Oh, yeah.
Something like that occurs.
Definitely so. Oh, yeah. No, I've bookmarked that in my mind.
Yeah.
Before moving on from Val, though, I'm just curious about some of your memories of being a little girl
mm-hmm.
to your own mother.
Oh.
And it seems to me it was pretty right on.
Absolutely. Loved her, and
yeah.
She was very easy to live with. And I do, though, remember as a child, because I was born when she was older, and most of my friends, that wasn't the case. Their moms were probably 10 years younger than mine.
Correct.
And I do remember being actively worried as a child that she was going to die.
Oh, of course, right.
Before I was ready.
Ready.
To let her go.
Yeah.
And I remember once... I guess when I was, 10 or something, thinking, I'm sure she'll live 30 more years. And I thought, okay, I think I can, if that happens, anyways, it turns out my mother lived to be 90.
Yes.
so she lived till I was 52. But I was very attached to her. And And she was just, you know, she always was a very safe person, comforting, funny. She had a great sense of humor.
Yes, yes.
Pretty amazingly relaxed as far as, well.
Did she ever lose her temper with the kids?
No.
Or, well, also, by this point, a lot of your siblings are quite more grown up now at this point. Yeah,
they were quite a little older. By the time I was in sixth grade, I was the only kid left at home. I mean, they used to come down from Berkeley on weekends, but she and I living together.
Uh-huh.
But she was pretty relaxed. For instance, in 1967, when the Monterey Pop Festival...
Oh, yes. Please tell this story.
Was advertised. My friend across the street, who I watched TV with, and I said, well, we got to go. You know, it was...
And for those of you who maybe some younger people, the Monterey Pop Festival is massively legendary. This happened in our hometown of Monterey Bay, right there at the Monterey Peninsula Fairgrounds. And you're getting only just a couple small acts like, The Who,
everybody.
Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix.
Anyone was there.
Yeah.
So my friend Lee and I, we mailed off, you know. You mm-hmm.
This is your Star Trek friend right here. Yeah. He was like, yes.
Four tickets.
Uh-huh.
And we went all three nights. We told our mothers, we want to go to Monterey Pop. And they said, oh, fine, whatever. They don't know what it is. And we were barely 14 at the time. And my mother would drive us to the place and drop us off at like 6 in the evening.
Yeah.
And then, because my mother went to bed earlier, so she did that run. And then my friend's mother, who was more of a night owl, would come and get us at, 11 or 12. We're standing out, on the sidewalk.
These like preteen girls just chill.
Worry?
Yeah.
They didn't worry.
Right.
And you know, the whole thing was totally peaceful.
Thing.
We never worried. Lee and I mean.
Also, you weren't. I don't think either of you were fiending for drugs.
No,
we and what I'm noticing too is by 1967, even drug counterculture is kind of new. It's not like,
and it was very, it really was very peace, love, and flowers, which was
true. And
tagline.
I've seen the documentary a couple of times, and you see some cops hugging some hippies at that one. This is not Altamont. This was not.
It isn't even Woodstock because it was small. You know?
Right.
And,
very.
We actually ran into people we knew, and it was perfect. It was perfectly safe.
I just love that your mom is just like, okay, yeah, because, go to this acid rock concert. No problem. Yeah.
Partly that she was relaxed. Partly that she really didn't know what this thing was. But she
was, of course.
Now,
real quick, you got to tell us about, because you saw what is now a famous, you YouTube Jimi Hendrix. It's going to show you his Monterey Pop legendary performance where he set his guitar on fire. But what I love when you've told me this story is the culture isn't really aware of like how cool it is to smash your guitar or to light it on fire. This was shocking, right?
Well, I thought it was shocking.
Right.
I first of all thought, just being a child of, I don't know, I kept thinking, well, what a waste. How can you smash up your instruments, you know?
You're wasting your equipment.
You're supposed to take care of things and make them last.
Right, yeah.
I also was a little shocked by Jimi Hendrix because it was a very sexual, what he's doing to his guitar.
Oh, yeah. So, right.
But it was okay.
Well, in the documentary, when he's fully into it, it cuts to someone, which I believe I've joked in times past. Oh, there you are. It's not mom, but it's someone of her around that age just looking shocked. Just not even, because now we go, yeah! But back then, I think it was kind of like, oh, boy, I don't know what to make of this.
It was good. You know, I'm all for, expanding your horizons. And anyway.
Right. But good for Val.
My mom had no problem with it. And also, actually, my mom, right after my sister got her driver's license, I mean, truly, like 2 days after, she allowed my sister to take me and my mother's car up to Candlestick Park, and we saw the last Beatles concert that they ever did.
Wow. So their last live concert. So that had to have been a little bit before Monterey Pop, therefore.
Yes, it was.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Mm-hmm. And you told me, because I remember I was like, you saw the Beatles? And you were like, well, I saw them, but they were kind of
way out on second base. So you had to take it for, and also I think they were so done with concerts, they didn't even play for all that long.
Right.
However.
Could you hear anything with all the girls screaming?
And there were some girls screaming.
Yeah, but even with that, you could still hear them and all that.
Yeah, you could hear
them. Okay.
But and the main thing was, you know, to say I was there.
Of course.
That was good. Anyway.
That's pretty amazing.
So my mom was pretty loose about that, too.
Yeah, well, you know, and I've seen, I know for me, she was very loose with me.
Yeah.
Certainly pretty tolerant about whatever I was watching on TV as well. I think occasionally she'd be like, oh, is it okay that you're watching this? And I'd probably lie to her and be like, yeah, it's fine. Mom said it's fine. I can watch it. Oh, okay. Because I was always into something a little gory of growing up. But I always remember her being kind of hip and cool.
Hip.
But without, like, trying too hard.
No, my mom was, because she was really forward-looking, and she did not dwell on the past, which is probably why she had such a successful later part of her life.
Right.
And she was very contemporary. She was always interested in things that were going on now and meeting new people. She was not at all dwelling in the past.
Right. And pretty progressive for the time as well. Like,
she was hip. I mean, I do think that's the word for it.
I've seen pictures of her in the 60s when, and actually some pictures of the both of you where you're like a young teenager and she's there and she's just looking kind of cool. Like she always, I know one thing, and I don't know when she went short hair, but she went short hair for the rest of her time once she did it. But like in the 60s, I can't explain it, but there is this hip look to adults who were cool. Not like, I'm not talking about like teenage, I'm talking about like someone in her 40s or 50s at this point who's doing a cool short hair, some funky glasses, some like, she just seemed really.
Plus, I will say my mom always, she was very slim. She always had a nice figure, you know, and so she looked great in those sort of, that era of wraparound skirts.
Right.
And she, espadrilles, she wore.
What's an espadrille?
Those are these, I think they were Spanish canvas shoes with rope soles, like fishing.
Oh, right.
And my mom went traveled by herself in the mid-60s. She started taking an annual trip. She went traveling alone. She went to Greece alone in 65. And again in 66, she went to Morocco. She went to Italy. She did a lot of, you know, and she came, I don't know, so she had sort of picked up on some of that sort of European stuff like espadrilles. And
right. Well, you know, and, I remember in the 90s driving with you out to the airport to pick her up from returning from Italy.
Yeah.
And this is a woman in her 70s at this point who is still traveling by herself going to countries. Very cool. Yeah.
I normally find bras to be so uncomfortable and constricting. But Skims has changed that. You know I love Skims underwear, so I finally tried their bras, and Skims has delivered again. Skims bras are worth the hype for the amazing shape and support they give, but what I wasn't expecting was how comfortable they are too. I've tried so many bras in the past, and the main issue that I have is that they weren't supportive enough, to the point where they felt slouchy. I love my Skims wireless form bra because it's so comfortable and supportive. The older I get, the more I care about actually being comfortable in what I wear every day. And with my wireless form bra, I no longer have to sacrifice my comfort for the support I need. Shop Skims bras at skims.com, now available in 62 sizes, 30A to 46H. Plus, get free shipping on all orders over $75. If you haven't yet, be sure to let them know we sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select our show in the drop-down menu that follows.
Yeah.
So anyway, my mom was a pretty independent woman, and
now we'll start to transition to your stepmother, because one thing that always intrigued me, it's like, not every divorce is bloody and messy. It seems to me, unless correct me if I'm wrong, the vibe I've gotten is that when Alistair, your father, who is English, and we'll get to that in a second, and Val, when they split, it was somewhat amicable.
It was amicable.
Kind of like a, look, we both know this isn't working out.
It was amicable. And they for a while, my father was living in Santa Barbara, and my mother and the younger three children were in Carmel. And my oldest brother stayed in Santa Barbara because he was almost out of high school and he wanted to finish there. Mm. But anyway, I know my family, you know, we went back and forth a lot. There was no animosity.
Gotcha.
But at some point in about 1961, I believe, I was pretty young, 8, my father moved back to England and sort of reconnected with his teenage sweetheart.
Yes.
Who had grown up in a neighboring village to his village in Gloucestershire. And her husband had died at some point.
And she is?
And her name is Rachel.
Yes.
And she becomes my stepmother.
Right.
And I didn't actually meet her. My other siblings who were older met her earlier in England, but I didn't go to England until I was 10. And so I met her when I was 10.
Right.
And they lived in, actually not in England, they lived in Wales on the north coast.
Uh-huh.
And so I spent a summer with them when I was 10. And I was really homesick. I really missed my mom.
Sure.
And Rachel was a totally different kind of, she was kind of glamorous in a way my mother wasn't.
Right.
And
right, like Val got hip, but never really glamorous.
She was not glamorous. But Rachel was sort of glamorous. And, but she really was very different from my mother. But she was totally fascinating. And I think she was very warm toward her stepchildren.
Right. Well, tell me about that first night or two you're being kind of displaced from your surroundings.
I was really homesick, and Rachel had this like bedroom with a four-poster bed and a a makeup table with a mirror and a frilly, you know, skirt around the table. And she wore right. makeup, which my mother didn't. So she was all kind of so different from me. And
interesting. Like a big vanity kind of like thing.
Exactly.
Okay, yeah.
And she sort of wore, you know, a robe with little fluffy, like a boa.
I'm totally picturing her with boas. That's absolutely what I'm picturing,
pink
yeah.
Pink slippers with pom-poms.
You're right.
But I was, one night, I was crying. I was really homesick, and she was so sweet. She took me into her big four-poster bed.
Oh.
And she cuddled me. And then I remember waking up in the morning. I think I slept with her a few times because but I would watch her at her vanity, and I just loved watching her do all her powder and, you know, just all this stuff and perfume bottles that you squeezed a little bulb, you know, to atomize the perfume. It was just so different.
Wow, and right. So it was like a morning ritual.
Yeah, and she definitely, my mother was always sort of up early and at 'em, and Rachel liked to lie in bed and have my father bring her coffee.
you told me she did not do breakfast.
She didn't. She just wanted her coffee.
Right.
She didn't eat until lunch.
Right. But I guess saying it helps her keep her
figure. She was concerned about her figure.
Her figure. Yes.
She was. And she had a couple of interesting things. She was quite deaf and had been since teenagehood.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And so she was also quite vain. So she had hearing aids, but she wore her hair so they were covered. And she also learned how to read lips. She didn't.
Right.
And I have to say, the final thing is, she was sort of clairvoyant.
Right.
So sometimes
Get into this.
Sometimes I'm not sure she was reading lips as much as reading your mind. But anyway, she could follow the conversation. And she had discovered, maybe at the same time she was going deaf, she kind of realized she had something like second sight. She could sort, maybe not see the future, but she had inklings of...
She could see the potential...
Something. She just futures. Knew stuff that was going to happen.
Wow.
And I recall her telling me that it worried her to start with, but then she just folded that into her, that's just the way she was. And she became, actually, as a career, she was, again, mostly a housewife, but this place that she lived in North Wales in the summertime was a holiday resort for Brits escaping from Manchester and Liverpool and
the
all
cities.
The city.
Right.
And there were these, you see it in old movies, English movies, there's the promenade along the beach, and there's the fun house and the...
Those weird little striped beach house things. That are like, right.
And there's, you know, the arcade and all this.
Yeah.
And she set herself up as a palm reader and a crystal ball gazer.
Wow.
And she had a caravan, which in England is the name for just sort of a little trailer, but it was Madame Rachel. Yes.
Ah, très bien.
And she was only in business for the summer season.
Uh-huh.
And she had people who came back every year just to get another reading from her. And so she had her hours, however, you know, a few hours a day she was open, and she would do a palm reading, and then she would take her crystal ball out of this black velvet bag where her family lived, and she saw things in the crystal ball, and she would tell you she used to love to read our palms, the kids.
Yes.
And she had this kind of an ink roller. She would sometimes ink our hands and take full handprints on paper. Because she liked to, over the years, she liked to see, you know, how we
presumably she can she can look at records of your prints and see the changes.
Loved having her read my hand because, for one thing, she had beautiful hands and really soft. And she did a lot of kind of massaging of the hand and running her fingers down your various lines.
Right.
And then she would tell you, you know, interesting things. And I can't really remember what she said to me.
Do you remember if her clientele found her to be pretty right on, like accurate?
And helpful. I don't think she always said, I think she had advice for people.
Yeah, it sounds like she's not telling you exact events that you're going to run into, but more like a directional thing you can follow.
Yes. And I do know one practical thing. somebody in our family, and this was not one of my siblings, but it was somebody in the family, was just talking to her once. And it wasn't like Rachel was doing a reading, but this woman was debating whether she should divorce her husband.
Mm.
And Rachel said, "I'd wait if I were you." And so this person did wait, and the husband died. Shortly afterward, and there was life insurance and that kind of thing.
Gotcha. Yeah, like, hold on to that because you might make some money off his death soon.
Might,
but yes,
there might be another way.
Right.
So
wow. Okay. Interesting.
So
yeah.
And then another story about Rachel.
Oh, please keep it going. I love this stuff.
Clairvoyance is okay. So I'm now grown up, and I'm married to your father, and we discovered that I was pregnant in England.
Correct.
In Wales.
So technically, my first conscious moment in existence was Wales.
Well, you weren't. I mean, maybe.
But I'm just saying. My life began in Wales.
I was pregnant, and we went down to Boots the chemist, which is
basically the Long's Drugs or the CVS of England.
Except little shops, and we bought a test, and it was positive. And I remember coming down the next day to Rachel, and I said, "You know, I'm pregnant." And she said, "Oh, I knew that."
You have to wonder, was that a poker face or was that an actual? You felt like when she told you, did you get the sense that she was welcome?
Yeah. I think. Now you know what.
Now you know what I know. Amazing! Wow. Now, Mom, did you ever feel any threat before you got to know her? Did you ever feel like, who's this new woman my dad's with? No.
And, you know, part of it is because I think if I had been, my parents had been divorced since I was three.
So you didn't really have.
I don't even remember living with both of them.
You never
parents.
Really had a formative imprint of like parental structure. Yeah.
You know, where they lived in the same house. No, I think I was really happy that my father had found someone, and I really just loved her from the moment I met her.
Were you ever a bit concerned about Alistair, your father, maybe being a bit lonely and depressed? Thank God, Dad found a lady.
And so I think that, you know, we were very happy when he found her.
Now talk about prescient moments. Let's talk about that great photo that you have in your hallway of young Alistair and young Rachel. This is before they will ever be an item. And she is. Describe the photo. It's pretty great.
So this is a photo that dates from sometime in 1920-something of my father's family in this Cotswold village. And my father already knows Rachel, who lives nearby. And there's sort of a family gathering, and my father's looking kind of dorky, maybe
kind of like me,
17 or 18 or something.
Uh-huh.
And there's this very cute girl with one of those cloche hats, you know, in the 20s,
very of its time. Yes,
and she's really eyeing my
She is doing the "Who are you?" like stare. Yeah. Now, what's so funny? Isn't there another guy looking at her all along?
I think she had a lot of suitors, Rachel did. She was, as I say, she wasn't really beautiful, but boy, she had, men were interested in her.
Sounds like she had literal attraction, magnetism.
She had attraction. And one of the things, she was always kind of skint, which is in England meaning broke, which partly so she did her palm reading and all, but she also ran a kind of a pseudo boarding house. She took in a couple of boarders. This is even when she and my father were married. It was a huge old Victorian house that she had that she'd inherited from her father. And she always kind of had these stray men, and they were damaged. I mean, they weren't anyone who she would be romantically involved with, but they loved her. And partly because she was a good nurturer.
Sure.
But, you know, there was one named Maxwell and there's one named Charles. They were there when I was there that summer.
Oh,
and
yeah.
She, you know, she gave them a room and she fed them. And they really would have been lost.
Thanks a lot, Rachel. Good to see you again, Rachel.
Anyway, she always had her lights on for men, I think.
Oh, yeah. And obviously,
but
Val
she and my mother got along very well.
Very well, right? I mean, wouldn't she and her children would come out and visit?
Yes. And I do believe when my mother and father first got married in 1938, they lived in England for a year until 39, when it seemed like war was imminent and it would be maybe a good time to come back to California. I think my mother and Rachel met at that time when she was married, she had children already,
mm-hmm.
and so they had met. And then after my father remarried, after a few years, they moved from North Wales to California, and my mother got along fine with my stepmother. Matter of fact, one of her trips to Greece, I was, 15, and my father and my stepmother came up from Santa Barbara, and they lived in our house and, you know, took care of me for a month while my mother was away.
Wow, yeah.
And after my father died, my mother and stepmother continued to be close. I mean, at that point, my stepmother was back in Wales.
Right.
And when my mother would go to the British Isles periodically, and she always stayed with Rachel.
Wow.
So they
just
they were,
amazing.
And again, they didn't dwell on, no, they were married to the same man or something. They were both interested, again, in kind of occult, interesting things.
Right.
Speaking
of, Val, I'm so envious. She went to Alan Watts' lectures.
Yes.
We're not talking about listening to something. She was there to see the man speak in I want to say Esalen, right?
Seeing as, you know, my mom lived fairly near Esalen. It was not, she did see him and Joseph Campbell and all the people you're interested in.
My heroes. And she got, I know you
Ram
have
Dass.
Oh. You know, I know we both talk about this often where it's like, I reached a new interest, and if only Val were still here, because I'd love to run it by her.
I know you just missed.
Yeah,
you weren't quite.
Alan Watts literally entered my life when I turned 30, 30. That was officially Alan Wattsville. And as I'm getting into him, I'm like, why do I feel like Val's right next to me while I talk about this? And sure enough, then I ran it by you, and you're like, she went. So what I like to imagine, because most of his recordings are from Esalen, I like to imagine that she's out there. She's in one of those recordings.
She might very well have been.
Definitely not one of these, because you always hear also people going in the background and all that.
Yeah, but my mom was. Oh, and one of the reasons why she went to the British Isles several times is because she went to Findhorn, which.
What's Findhorn?
Well, it was a kind of a New Age community on the northeast coast of Scotland.
It sounds like a Lord of the Rings location right there, but yeah.
Sort of. Anyway, it would have been the same kind of ilk with all these people we're talking about.
Well, you know what's interesting about is interests. Mm-hmm. The fact that these are two women who are not dwelling on comparing and despairing on who had a better time with this man.
Yeah.
Like, they passed the Bechdel test, as we call it these days. Like, they weren't talking about a man. They were two women in this scene are talking about something larger than the immediate men
enough,
in their lives.
The things that they talked about together and really were interested in were things that my father was not interested in at all. My father was just a
perfect
total sort of intellectual. Well, he was interested in poetry.
But I don't. It sounds like he wasn't quite a new ager.
He wasn't really new age.
Yeah,
he was probably more a latent Catholic. I mean,
yeah, can't quite ditch the Lord for this free thinking. But yeah,
or he can't quite commit to it. But he's sure, sort of pulled right. that way. I think so.
Well, it's very fascinating to see how sometimes. An extended step family mm-hmm. really fits with the whole big family picture.
Yeah, no, it was really interesting. And actually, I am a stepmother too.
Yes,
and,
you are.
And
she's just as much your daughter
like
now.
Like, right? I have a really good relationship with my stepdaughter. And I also have a good relationship with her mother. You know,
that is true.
Does,
yes,
you know, make it easier on the children if that's the situation.
And it's true. I've always observed you with Maya's mom. You two just
we're fine.
Get on and talk about. And again, we're not talking about life with this man, right? No, we're talking about life. If anything, we're talking about what our kids are up to. You know,
interest. So,
And what the other thing that kind of. It feels like we're not carrying a lot of shame, either Rachel or Val. Seems to me that they didn't seem to have life-limiting baggage, it seems like.
No,
I know they had their baggage.
They had plenty of baggage. My mom certainly had some sort of anxiety, you know, the family
the good old
anxiety.
Overly worrying, yes.
A few isms and phobias. But it really didn't... curtail her life or she, you know, the fact that she went out and traveled alone in the mid 60s wasn't common for a woman to do. So I really think my mom had some amazing adventurous spirit and courage that even though she may have been having, you know, anxieties or depressions in other ways, somehow travel really just was a just really an empowering thing for her.
Right. Yeah. No. I remember her telling me about her journeys.
She loved it. She would say, you know, people just roll their eyes. They can't believe And this was when she was, I would say, in her prime. I'd say her 50s and her 60s were her prime for travel. She said, I love if I'm somewhere like Greece or Italy, waking up in some little pension or little hotel, not knowing where I'm going to be sleeping the next night.
Wow. There you go. I know for some people that's way too on.
Are you kidding? I want the tour and I want to know just where I'm going to be. And,
right.
And that's pretty loose. I think it's even looser than I.
This was looser than your standards for travel.
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah.
So
wow.
But she said she had a real sense of adventure when she was. That age, and she always traveled really light, you know, just not exactly a backpack, but just something you could easily carry because she didn't want to be weighed down, you know. You
right.
Be able to, and she never rented a. She always took local bus or Greece. I think who knows? Probably a horse and cart from time to time.
Yeah, whenever I hear about traveling in the mid 20th century, it just sounds. Perfect.
It was pretty ideal.
And less hassle traveling, too.
I mean, I was in England in 63. That was that summer, which I wish I could do that same trip that we're, because we went all over the place now. I would have appreciated it more now.
Mm.
But I did go back in 68 when I was 15 with a student group, but we went to kind of hit all the European highlights in a month, you know, and I'm so glad I saw all this stuff when it was so easy to see. I mean, once you got there, you know, it wasn't crowded. Tourism
right.
still
I
wasn't
know. That's the
huge,
part that just,
you know,
like,
so you could
yes.
just.
And you're not nauseated by your fellow Americans who are loudly pointing at things.
Endless lines. I hear now you have to see the Eiffel Tower, or at least pre-pandemic, you had to make a reservation like 6 months ahead. You know, so we just, anyway, I sort of feel like, okay, good. I've seen all these, the the things that you have to see. And now, like when Michael and I go to France, we never go anywhere near a tourist attraction.
Yeah,
you know,
you just
stick to the unbeaten track.
Absolutely.
And, it's kind of how you have to do it now. And although maybe traveling now is the time to go.
Considering because not everyone's going to do it at the moment. That's true.
Why you're renewing your passport.
Yes, folks. Currently, right now, we are renewing my passport, which you all should do yourselves. Get on that now.
I'm telling you, you should, because apparently it takes 4 months to get one. So if it's expiring anytime soon, renew your passport now.
It's cool too, because it also shows that both Val and Rachel, they sound like they were both pretty well traveled.
Yes,
as well.
Pretty
or,
well.
Or at least, or let's put it this way, at least you're switching up your environment every few years.
Rachel actually, something to do with her husband, her first husband, they lived in Germany. I think maybe one or two of her kids might have been born there.
Uh-huh.
They did live in Germany for a while.
Oh, interesting,
and
yeah.
Of course, France, she knew French, but that's pretty much, if you go to school in England, you pretty well, French is the language you learn, so.
I feel like, because I know, I mean, I grew up with a very solid foundation mm-hmm. with Val. I only met Rachel once. Yes. It was admittedly towards the end of her life. And
she was pretty gaga.
She was a little gaga. She didn't quite, I just remember, and it was this very, very, when you're a boy and your voice hasn't dropped yet and not one part of your body's dropped yet, you it's very embarrassing to have a nice little high-pitched voice. And maybe also, who knows what she's seeing out of her eyes at this point, but I just remember all she kept, because I'm hearing these stories about this fortune teller, and you kind of warned me, you were like, she's not exactly fortune telling these days.
Yeah.
She's kind of, you know.
Kind of lost her
and balance. By the way, that's not that she was a fortune teller, she was a seer. She's not exactly, you know, so she, all I know is she kept looking at me and she kept saying, and who's she?
Yeah.
Who's she?
I do believe she was pretty blind.
Yeah. And also.
You know, and she also didn't know who I was. And I had been, a very, pretty close to her from 10 years old on.
Right.
So she wasn't. Yeah, you weren't.
But I mean, also, and it's, hey, I'm glad though. And I do actually remember. And I got to say this too. I do remember even then getting this sort of glamorous. A magic glamour vibe from her,
even at that point. Yes, she did have a glamour to her.
She had that going on. And it seems to me that you were very well influenced by both of these ladies.
Yeah.
And certainly I know that, because I did know Val so well, I see Val's inheritance, her living inheritance in you.
Well, my mom was a really good role model in the sense, what's important in life, and to enjoy life and to have a sense of humor, because
that's the big one.
It's really just terrible if you stop to think about it.
Last time we did this last year, we concluded with the sort of what would you give advice to new mothers? And I guess one thing that, you know, I think we kind of answered that question last time, but to reiterate this time around, it does seem to me that having a sense of humor is really one of your greatest allies, not only as just a human on this planet, but like as a parent.
As a parent, and speaking now from my perspective, for aging.
Aha, yes.
Because it is, you know, pretty darn funny, a lot of what.
Well, let's talk a little bit about when the mother, because, you know, it's interesting, there's phases of the mother.
Yeah.
You're the mother who will be young enough to have children, and then you become the maiden matron crone. I feel bad about throwing that last part. That sounds so like, but
well, we got to own the word crone.
Crone. Well, and also crone. How about a grand sorceress? That
Something
sounds pretty
like
great
that.
To me. You know, but yes, let's talk just a little bit about that. Just right there, just sort of when the mother. The grace, the humor. What is some of the humor that you're finding in, as you get a little bit older now?
Let's see. I don't know. You know, looking for my glasses and they're on top of my head.
Right. And laughing about that.
And laughing about it. And not worrying that I'm actually losing my mind. I think it's just overload of the brain. You know, it's
yeah.
just, the modern age is just way too much coming in.
Yeah.
I was telling you yesterday, I don't think that we're really even, humans aren't evolved for technology, really, as far as evolution is concerned.
No.
I mean, like driving a car at 80 miles an hour is, you know.
Well, as you said it best yesterday, take any of those macho, you know, sword-wielding knights back in the day, put them in the passenger seat of a car today, and let's see them freak out.
Right. So I think we aren't really equipped for all that. So I think to try, you know, and everything is just changing all the time. I mean, you can't even get used to, you know, the interface on your bank's website without them changing it. And you've got to, so
right.
I think we have to, so much going on, to, we have to remember the stupid stuff we have to remember that
true.
No wonder you can't find your glasses sometime, even when they're right on top of your head.
And maybe it's
too much of your brain is occupied with just
yeah.
these details of modern life. So, but it is funny getting old. I mean, even when I, like yesterday, I had such a bad back, and I was, you know, every time I stood up, I was sort of groaning, and I listened to myself. And
what did Sophia Loren say?
Yeah, Sophia Loren says, even when you feels, you know, when you get old, don't succumb to the temptation of groaning when you get up. Just
right.
It still hurts, but don't groan. You just have
and to. I'm doing that too much already at 30. I'm like, oh, God. It's like, oh, come on now.
Yeah. So I do admire old people who are, you know,
yeah,
still laughing.
And I, you know, I remember Val constantly bumping her head into yeah. things and then oh, laughing yes. it off and yeah. slamming her shin into ooh, something. And yeah. yeah, yeah, she always had some marks up and down her shins. And she would all, and I remember one of the my favorite expletive of Val's was, oh, poo.
Oh. Yes, I guess she did say that. Or balderdash or something. I remember when I was a kid, I thought it was her real expletive, which I thought was kind of shocking. She'd say, damnation.
Oh, wow.
So.
Yes. Oh, uh-oh. Mom's really mad at this point. Damnation.
It was never at us. It was because of you know, she slammed her finger in the door or something.
Right. Well, Mama, it's always a pleasure having you here. And I got to say, I feel the blessing of these ladies because they positively affected you, and I feel like they gave you a solid foundation to not only be a great, flexible, and dynamic human being, but also to put that into your motherhood.
Yes, it's true. And as I say also, they were good examples for being a mother, and also for now, or yeah. not quite yet, but soon, being an old lady.
Right. Well, and maybe, shall we say, regardless of age, just would you say that they were a great because woman's influence
good,
to you?
Know, you? Their whole lives, they were
right.
They were great. And they always seemed to be fulfilled and happy and not dwelling on impossible things or things that you can't change or that are so far back.
Right,
you know.
Which I gotta say, I see you doing pretty yeah. admirably,
yeah.
and I got a lot to learn from you because
yeah.
I'm afraid I still am a little too attached to past things.
Well,
but
I mean, I'm interested in family history, but that's more from a just
yeah
knowledge thing. I really drop a lot of stuff from my own history. That
sure that things is, that may not have
I'm
gone
not,
well, but why dwell on you, it? Kind of
yeah.
thing. Yeah,
what you can do about it now.
Well, I have a funny phrase, which I say all the time these days. I'm the last kid to learn, but I do learn.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm a little bit of a tardy student on some things in life. And that's whatever. We'll progress as quickly or as slowly as whatever is there. But I feel like I am learning more and more from you. I know certainly that your own relationship to me has become less worried. It might help the fact that I'm now
yeah.
looking at 40 in the next few years, so it's kind of, you know,
yeah.
different child now in your life.
Yeah.
But just in general, I've seen you worry less as a whole about things.
Well, I think that is a benefit of aging.
Yeah. And I'm kind of, I hope I can reduce my worry as I get older. Sometimes I feel like I'm going to have a similar story to Val. And I'm not trying to make it sound like it was some sob story, but I want to believe that. Wait till I'm 45, folks. I might be finally shedding a few things and going, whatever, let's become hip and cool and just kind of accept life. And but I do feel like I'm a man who has had a very lucky inheritance of strong female support from you, from Val, from Cynthia. By proxy,
actually,
Rachel.
To say all my in my sort of that kind of heritage is all women.
Yeah,
it's two grandmothers, two mothers. Cynthia, my father was sort of incidental in my life because I mean I loved him, but I didn't.
Yeah,
I didn't see him very often.
Not a cold man, not an unloving man, but still distant.
Well, no,
and not maybe just because of location.
He was distant because he lived in
England. Right. True.
And then I didn't have, because my mother's father, I never had one grandfather, and my other grandfather died when I was quite young. I was eight. So, but I did have these strong grandmothers, and my mother and my stepmother and. So I feel like I've had a lot of female influence too.
The great Inca Rose, who does the music for this program, and she's family to us. Yeah. You know, she's wonderful. She always reminds me and likes to say that, you know, women, mothers, are the portals to all life. So, Mom, thanks for beaming me into this existence.
And I do have to say something. Just on, if we can get into current events.
Yes.
I really feel for mothers in Ukraine.
Yeah.
And just or women in war. Women, what they have to bear, because they're still bearing children.
Right.
And, you know.
Well, weren't you telling me that you had just learned that?
Biology is just, I mean, I'm... Can you imagine being and with children?
Right.
Carrying children.
You know what's funny? Because I told you the other day I saw this clip where this lady, this Ukrainian woman say, no, they told us to leave. I'm not gonna leave all the men just stay here and fight. I'm gonna join the front lines. And when I told you, you had this mixed look, which I kind of understood in the moment. You had some admiration for her. And there was also a little bit of, from what I could tell, almost like a bit of, not sadness, but like a kind of compassion for her.
Well, yes.
Because that's...
But I also think possibly she didn't have children. I just think...
Oh, maybe.
Children, especially little ones.
I think that's really rough. The first instinct
would be to try to get them to safety.
Yeah. But yeah.
Anyway, I do think, on Mother's Day, I send out my heart goes out to, and it's not just in Ukraine, all over the world, in war zones,
yeah.
I think women and children are very vulnerable.
You know, when you mention that, I try to be as compassionate as I can as a man who sometimes is, because of my biology and because of the society we live in, I'm excused from a lot of sometimes these questions to think about, or indeed these experiences. But I'm sitting here with a deep appreciation of what you're saying, that like, yeah, it's already vulnerable enough to have children on this planet. And then if danger is all around, and it seems to me that in some ways it's never been per capita safe to have children. It's never been a safe world necessarily ever. To have kids, even though it's the most natural thing.
Right.
But I don't know. I agree with you. I'm right there with you, Mom. I'm going to send out today on Mother's Day a good well wish and deep gratitude to to all the ladies who are, to the grandmothers, to the mothers and the stepmothers, and to the mothers who don't have literal children, but have been shepherding lots of kids through it all. Well, any other thoughts on your end, Mom? Just anything we forgot about Val or Rachel, that some little last story that comes to mind? I know there's always something one forgets, but
I think we've done them proud.
I think so too. I think so too. To Rachel, to Val, to Cynthia, to Susan, and to all amazing ladies, and Mom, just to you personally, because you are those are the great spiritual ladies, now the actual flesh and bone lady right in front of me. Thank you, Mom, truly. And well, there you go, folks. Another Mother's Day. I hope you are having a good time. And you know, again, I always put this out there, folks, because it's easy to be like, go out and make sure you tell your mom you love her. Hey, some of you might not have a good connection with your mom. And I have full respect for that. I just hope that the goddess, the spirit of the goddess, may she be looking out for you and soothing you on this day. In the mean in between, thank you for your time. Thank you for your rhyme. In the Words of Alex Rogers is a podcast orbiting the mothership of Wild 7 Studios. Music by Inca Rose. Keep your ears open for Storyscapes, Simpin' After Dark, and other audio goodies from Wild 7. And keep your eyes open for its first feature-length film, Debbie and the Devil.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. Like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on Auto Trader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on Auto Trader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on Auto Trader. Just you wait. Auto Trader.